Hypnotic persistence. Persistence is one of the most wonderful human qualities that you will encounter. It is a great quality because it allows a person to eventually excel in what he wants to do in life and also helps people gain compliance from people around him. Persistence is extremely helpful in hypnosis because it will allow you to break down the mental barriers that people may have set up to avoid complying with certain things. For example, some people may have a strong drive to avoid buying things. So if you are trying to sell people your product or service, you will have to deal with the fact that some customers just don't like buying things without a good fight. Persistence is the tool that will help you win over even the most resistant of subjects, because that is how the human mind works. The mind doesn't have a mind of its own. It is influenced by stimuli and information, and over a period of time, its own filters and defenses begin to erode in the face of persistent input or information. To illustrate this, let me share with you a statement that I read from a known celebrity who works for MTV. He was talking about his involvement with another well-known group who defended animal rights. This guy became involved in animal rights advocacy and even appeared in some videos that supported the ban on animal fur. Now, this guy posted this statement on a prominent part of his website. Before, I had ignored this group, but as soon as I started working with them and I learned more about what they stand for, I am finding fewer and fewer reasons to disagree with them. So right then and there, this celebrity admitted that he didn't actually believe the stuff that the group was saying before. But because he was exposed to the activities and advocacies of the group, he was able to adopt their beliefs as his own. And soon enough, he didn't know how to resist the group's ideology anymore. If you are ready to develop your own skills in hypnotic persistence, here are some expert techniques that you can use anytime to win over a resistant subject. Technique number one. The first technique is employing hypnotic reinforcement during a conversation. Hypnotic reinforcement is essentially just linguistic repetition, but it can be coupled with linguistic structures like yes sets, agreement frames, and so forth. It is also known as the hypnotic triple in the field of hypnosis, because three is considered a magic number when you are trying to break down someone's mental resistance. Hypnotists often repeat a single idea three times in a row to achieve a bigger impact on the subject. Here's an example of hypnotic reinforcement. So, you have seen the furniture that you want to buy, but before you actually buy the furniture, I want to make sure that this is really what you need for your home. And this is just to say that when you buy the furniture that I showed you, it will be the same furniture that you will be happy to install in your living room and bedroom. I really want you to make the best choice when you buy new furniture. So let's talk about that some more. Did you notice how I mentioned buy furniture or buy new furniture four times in a single cluster of statements? That's how the hypnotic triple works. You just pound away at a single idea and you integrate it in a series of statements to reinforce the desired behavior. I did not actually tell the customer to buy anything, but that did not stop me from reinforcing the desired action that I want to manifest from the interaction. As you can plainly see from our discussions, being persuasive can be very fun and easy with conversational hypnosis because you don't have to break your back trying to get people to say yes to you. More often than not, people will give you the feedback that you want after you have implanted the right ideas in their minds. It's like you are just pressing buttons and giving the raw material for your subjects to process, and after a while, your subjects produce the final product that will benefit both parties. And the best thing about the hypnotic triple is that you can use this technique without appearing to be bossy or too desperate to achieve an outcome. Of course, if you keep saying things like, "Buy this, okay? Buy it because I need sales today. Buy it, please," your statements will produce a completely different outcome because the repetition takes on a very desperate and anxious form. The hypnotic triple will be canceled out, and the subject will probably back off from your offer because you seem too eager to get what you want from the subject. Technique number two. The second persistence technique that you should try to use every time you come across resistant subjects is hypnotic seeding. In a very early section of the book, I shared with you the idea of implanting hypnotic suggestions within the subject's subconscious mind. This is done primarily to avoid the barriers that may have been set up by the person's conscious mind. Because the conscious mind is often very resistant and defensive, we need to be able to bypass it to produce the desired outcomes more quickly. Hypnotic seeding is effective because you do not have to do a lot of hard work in order to reap its benefits. Again, we are going to take advantage of the fact that the mind can make its own conclusions, and if it is given the right hypnotic suggestions, it will eventually arrive at a conclusion that is favorable for the hypnotist or speaker. This technique is very useful in situations wherein the subject would have to be pulled out of his comfort zone in order to realize something very important. That's why hypnotic seeding is often used in clinical hypnotherapy and other forms of psychotherapy, because it is far safer to allow a person to reach his own conclusions than to force him to believe in something that he may not want to accept as factual or truthful. Here's an example. There was once a brilliant man named Milton Erickson. This man started practicing hypnosis even before modern medical practitioners were aware of what hypnosis was in the first place. One day, Erickson met a woman who had trouble with the idea of having sex with her partner. She felt anguish and confusion over the subject because her mother always told her that sex was essentially wrong. She was told this information when she was very young. The patient's mother died when she was young, too. The woman was 24 years old when she visited Erickson, and within that whole time, she carried with her the idea that sex needs to be avoided because it was dirty. If you look at it, Erickson could have just pulled out a textbook and informed his patient that what she had been holding on to for the past few years was wrong because of so many reasons. He could have taken a more direct approach and be done with her. But of course, Erickson knew that this approach will not work. The patient's problem was not about sex education or scientific facts. The underlying problem was she never gained the approval of her mother when it comes to having sex. And because her mother was dead, she never really moved on. And she never really outgrew what her mother had told her about sex. What did Milton Erickson do to help the patient? He simply shared with her something that did not occur to her since her mother told her that sex was wrong. You learned about sex from your mother when you were very young. The rules and information that are given to children are not the same rules and facts that apply to someone who is 24 years old. You and the young you are no longer the same people. You have changed, and therefore the rules of life can also be changed. Erickson was simply stating an obvious fact. She was no longer 10 years old, and if she continued holding on to beliefs that had been taught to her when she was 10, she would never have a normal life. Erickson also subtly suggested that sex was normal, because if the patient's mother never did it, the patient would have never existed. You can use the same technique when you want to accomplish something really important. For example, let's say that you want a promotion or a raise. How will you use hypnotic seeding to implant the idea when you talk to your boss? All you have to do is to mention the idea of having a promotion to your boss and then move on quickly to another topic. Do not allow your subject to dwell on the idea of giving you a raise because you only need to seed the idea in the subject's mind. Another subtle way to introduce the idea is to talk about someone in the company who has already received a raise or perhaps a promotion. That way, your boss would be able to think about the possibility of giving you a raise later on. Technique number 3. The third persistence technique centers on creating a succession of steps for your subject so that he does not become overwhelmed with what you want him to do. This technique can be likened to placing pieces of salami on a sandwich. You start slowly, and soon enough, you have a nice long pile of salamis in a row. From just one small piece, you can create a sandwich that is as long as a tray if you want. Introducing a series of small, achievable steps to your subject will ensure that he will not abandon you because you are asking too much from him. This persistence technique is often used by hypnotists who want to create grand mental experiences for their subjects. By grand mental experience, I refer to hypnotic experiences that are so complete and well-constructed that the subject feels like he has been transported to a realm beyond physical reality, and he is able to inhabit this realm until the hypnotist calls him back to the waking world. If you listen to a good hypnosis recording that focuses on solving specific problems like smoking, you will notice that most hypnotists, after the induction phase, exert a lot of effort in feeding the hypnotic subject bits and pieces of information that eventually lead to the target experience. It's like playing with construction toys like Lego. Every magnificent Lego structure begins with a few pieces. You just keep building it with the small pieces until you finally get the outcome that you like. There is no magic. You just have to be persistent at piling the right pieces on top of each other. As long as you keep working on the structure, you will eventually get there. Now, how can this technique be used in day-to-day situations? To illustrate just how effective and easy this technique can be, let me share with you a true story about a woman who specializes in getting people to involve themselves in genuine charity work. The woman in question doesn't just approach people who are already active in charity. No, she specializes in talking to people who are known for avoiding charity events and groups. She has been extremely successful in what she does, and a lot of people are curious as to how she does it in the first place. When asked for her secret in persuading people to engage themselves in charity-related works, she was quite straightforward with her answer. She said that she usually begins the process by asking the person a very simple and very easy request. For example, she would ask the person to write a letter for the organization so that they may invite others to join a charity meet. After a short period of time, the charity worker would ask the person again for something else. Maybe she will ask the subject to modify the letter a little bit to include more details. Of course, the subject will comply to the initial request because they are easy to do and for a good cause at that. Little by little, the subject begins to feel a sense of responsibility for the things that he has been doing for the charity. And via the law of consistency, the person would have to live up to his newfound reputation as a supporter of charity. When this happens, the charity worker is able to ask for actual donations. And she has been known to encourage donations that are worth thousands of dollars. What does this show us? First, it illustrates a basic truth about human behavior. Human behavior can be changed by external agents and external forces, even if there is resistance to begin with. This resistance to change and action can be dealt with little by little through a succession of small steps. I have to emphasize that you need to introduce small steps so as to avoid shocking your subject's system. If your subject is shocked by what you say, the trance will be broken and the behavioral change that you are after will not manifest. As you can already visualize, this persistence technique can easily be used alongside other methods. For example, you can use an agreement frame or a yes set to nudge the other person to agree with you verbally before he does something for you. This, in turn, strengthens his stake via the principle of consistency. All of the principles and techniques that I've discussed with you are interconnected with each other. But like a puzzle, you would have to expertly put them together to produce something that you can be proud of. What are the steps to creating a powerful and compelling series of suggestions that will eventually give you the desired behavior or action? Here are the steps. First, you need to think of a very small request that is somewhat related to the final action that you want the subject to perform for you. For example, if you want to sell your old car to a friend or colleague, a reasonable first request might be, "Can you come over to see this car that I've been telling you about?" The friend comes over and looks at the car. As your friend looks at your car, you can begin priming him to think that the car is a good bargain. Refer to our earlier sections for great techniques on how to do exactly this. The next step is to hold your subject by the hand and lead him to another request that is a little bit more than what you've asked before. If your friend has come to your home to look at the car, would he be willing to test drive it around the neighborhood just for kicks? When your friend agrees to do it for you, you can again prime him so that he feels that it is indeed a great investment and he would have a lot of fun with it. What if your friend suddenly disagrees with what you are proposing? What if he says that the car looks junky and it's probably worth $150? Well, the logical thing to do here is to back up a little so you can give the subject a little breathing space. Objections and resistance are clear signs of inadequate rapport. If you haven't established much rapport with the subject, even if he is your friend, resistance can come quickly, especially if the subject has sensed that you want him to do something eventually. Do not try to vehemently defend your own points. This action would lead to more arguing and even more resistance. Remember, people do not like it when they are being disproved. People are designed to hold on to their beliefs like gold. It is how we are designed by nature. So if you try to disprove the other person's beliefs, you are just going to run into more brick walls along the way. And soon enough, the subject just might walk away from you. The most effective way to deal with this occurrence is to stop and go back to the last point that the subject agreed with. So instead of trying to defend yourself with what you've said, you're going to reinforce a positive point in the conversation so that you can begin creating a ladder of agreement or compliance once again. This is the beauty of hypnosis. You can do retakes, and you can definitely change things as you go along. There are no fixed boundaries and no limitations. You just have to have the right tool set so you would know what to do in different situations. Without a reliable toolkit, you would not be as effective as someone who has really made it a point to continue studying what hypnosis is all about and what it truly entails in a real-world setting. Now let's go back to the third step. The third phase in our technique is to continue linking bigger and more significant steps until a natural flow is achieved. When the subject feels that it is only natural that he do something for you, that would be the time that you can really start making big requests. Of course, there would be no assurance that you can get someone to donate $10,000 for a worthy cause, but imagine the wide array of possibilities available to you now that you know how to create behavioral change in the most efficient way possible. Just remember, never attempt to shock someone into action. That used to work, but as people became smarter, more critical, and warier of the world in general, it doesn't work as effectively anymore. As a conversational hypnotist, you have to adapt to these very real changes that are taking place in culture and personal politics. Because if you don't adapt to these changes, you are going to lose out on opportunities to continue winning in life. Technique number 4. The fourth technique is related to the previous method that we have just discussed. It is called the principle of compounded effect. What does this principle entail? If we were to go back to our discussion on passive feedback and suggestibility, you would be able to note that as a person complies with small requests, he becomes conditioned to respond to bigger and more complex suggestions. Hypnotists use this principle a lot when they want to increase the suggestibility of a subject in a short period of time. Here's an example. In a few seconds, you will feel more and more relaxed. And as you feel more and more relaxed, you will begin to feel sleepy as you sit on that comfortable chair. And as you continue to feel sleepy, you will fall into a pleasant state of rest, and your mind will become blissfully clear. So when you are using this principle to mold your statements, you are essentially stacking instructions or hypnotic suggestions on top of each other. But in order for this technique to work, you need to make sure that the statements are somewhat related to each other and there is a smooth, buttery flow of ideas and suggestions from beginning to end. At this point in time, it would be a good idea to remember the concept of fractionation. The more you fractionate your hypnotic suggestions and statements, the more effective you become in conditioning the subject to just accept what you are saying. Because little by little, the conscious barriers that people have will begin to erode, and soon enough, these barriers will disappear completely as the person relaxes and trusts you enough to let you in. The Advanced Code of the Haruspex. In a previous section, we talked about how psychics and oracles were able to convince people that they knew about a person's past and future. In this section, we are going to explore the various aspects of the Code of the Haruspex, so you can apply the unique strategies employed by expert psychics and mediums. If you are wondering if I want you to become a psychic yourself, the answer is no. Unless you feel strongly to become a psychic yourself, there is no need to become an oracle just because you want to be an effective conversational hypnotist. What I do want you to achieve is mastery of the various elements needed in order to convince someone that you really know what you are talking about. This is the core of the Code of the Haruspex, the ability to create complete trust with mere words. Following are the advanced techniques and guidelines needed by any aspiring conversational hypnotist to achieve the level of mastery of the modern-day Haruspex. 1. Show or demonstrate to the subject that you have what it takes to deliver the goods. Psychics and fortune tellers accomplish this by equipping their offices with crystals, gems, crystal balls, and other arcane items that usually are seen on TV or in the movies. Other professionals also do this to impress their clients. Doctors and dentists also decorate their offices with various proofs that they are competent and that they have what it takes to really deliver what they promise. As a conversational hypnotist, it is important for you to realize that the environment that you create, whether it reflects the truth or not, has a direct impact on the way your subject will perceive you. So my advice would be to be careful where you invite people when you speak to them, and always make sure that you can demonstrate that what you are about to promise can easily be delivered. People need some form of evidence. Your evidence, on its own, should be able to convince your subject of your authenticity. If you have to explain everything to your subject, then the impact of the artificial environment that you have created will be reduced greatly. Second, as you speak to your subject, you must make it a point to shift, at least temporarily, his perspective of reality. Each person has his own unique take on physical reality. You can influence your subject's sense of reality by powerful stories that will implant hypnotic messages inside the subject's subconscious mind. Third, all hypnosis is self-hypnosis. If your subject does not believe in what you are saying, your cause will be lost. So before you can even begin creating expectations, ask yourself this: does the subject trust me enough to believe in everything that I say? If the answer is no, then go back to the first step of hypnotic process, rapport. In a nutshell, rapport is established by first matching your subject and then leading him later on to the direction that you want to pursue. The process is gradual, but it is not necessarily slow or tedious either. You must exude the confidence and authority that will capture your subject's imagination the moment he steps into the same room as you. 4. A person who chooses to believe another person will want to continue believing because of the principle of consistency. People feel a certain sense of obligation to follow through with their own commitments. Believing in someone is a form of obligation, and you must make it clear that once a person starts agreeing with you, you are there to lead the interaction to a logical conclusion. You must work hard to produce an outcome that will benefit both parties, not just you. 5. Learn to be extremely observant when interacting with your subjects. Pay attention to the smallest details. You might be surprised how much you can learn by just looking at another person's facial expressions, posture, bodily gestures, hand gestures, arm movements, clothing, jewelry, choice of beverage, etc. Each observable detail about a person contributes to the overall picture that you are painting in your mind. That picture in your mind is your cheat sheet that you can reference any time to get you out of tight situations. For example, let's say that you were trying to impress an executive to accept your marketing ideas. You are desperate to get a go signal from the executive, but he seems unimpressed. By using the information that you have gathered by just observing your subject, you can create a plausible argument for your marketing ideas. You can make your dialogue relevant to the person's possible desires, needs, and values. And remember, if you can do a little digging just before you meet the person that you have to influence or persuade, that would help immensely because you won't be shooting in the dark. If you play your cards right, you can show your subject that you really know what to say because you know about him, but he doesn't know anything significant about you. 6. How do you know that a person has already adopted the kind of reality that we have constructed for the subject? Easy. Just ask the subject questions about what you have been talking about. If he agrees with most of the things that you say, and he begins utilizing your own line of reasoning, you would know immediately that you have already succeeded. There would be that vital point in the interaction where the subject would be willing to sacrifice something, for example, time, money, etc., to support what you are offering, because that is how the principle of consistency works. We feel horrible when we are not consistent with our words and actions, so most of the time, we pursue something until its natural conclusion. 7. Never underestimate the power of generalizations. If you do not know anything about the subject at all, generalized statements are the way to go. Generalized statements allow conversational hypnotists to analyze their subject's feedbacks. This will then allow them to make educated inferences about the subject's values, belief systems, etc. So let's say you were trying to impress a member of the opposite sex. What should be your opening statement? Should it be, "You seem like someone who likes dancing during Saturday nights," or, "You seem like someone who likes to relax every now and then"? Of course, the generalized statement will give you much-needed wiggle room in case your subject gives you a negative response. If the subject says, "No, I hate going out, bars and movie houses bore me," You can just say, "No, I didn't think you enjoyed those things either." Afterward, you can just venture with another generalized statement. You can keep doing this until your subject finally provides a clear, positive feedback. 8. Learn to utilize your errors in such a way that you will still be on your toes, even if the subject completely denies that what you said is true. The beauty of language is that its meaning is generally always shifting. In fact, this is one of the reasons why dictionaries, thesauruses, and other lexical references are constantly being updated. Language is like an organism that grows and evolves over time. When language is used or appropriated in human speech, the slipping links of language become even more apparent. So let's say you said something like, "You look like someone who enjoys adventure more than anything else." And the subject says, "No, I hate taking risks." You can counter that objection with, "You're no daredevil, I admit, but you do take silent risks with very specific things, and that makes you a truly unique adventurer in your own right." As you can see from the short example, with a simple twisting of terms, you can easily turn around what seems to be a dead end into something more productive and potentially helpful to your cause as a conversational hypnotist. 9. As a hypnotist, you should have a good mastery of connecting details and relating the same to your subjects. The skill of storytelling may not be natural for many people, but it can be learned. If you have trouble imagining stories in your mind, you don't have to be discouraged or distressed. The best teacher in my experience is fiction novels and books on psychology. I know that there are many other forms of literature out there that might be of help, but these are my preferences. Masters of lore like Stephen King are excellent resources for fledgling storytellers. Of course, you might not see the techniques immediately, so I suggest that you just enjoy yourself as you read these special masterpieces. Learn the language of storytelling because it is very different from plain, everyday language. The more you read stories yourself, the easier it becomes for you to use the same language that popular storytellers have already mastered. Some hypnotists even go as far as writing their own stories. Whether these stories are published or not is irrelevant. What matters is the hypnotist was able to practice his new skill, and this greatly improves his chances of being more influential and persuasive when he spins his own yarn in front of an audience. 10. The idea of creating illusions might not be the most savory of ideas to hypnotists, especially to those who believe that masterful use of language is sufficient to get good results. But if you think about it, people who cause others to believe in illusions are also masters of the spoken language themselves. So it is absolutely imperative to you to always convey a clear target or goal for your subject. And this goal should be the one thing that the subject will pursue with all of his might. And you are the only one who would be able to provide it.